These days, good sense is in short supply. Amid the fear-mongering and fake news, it can be hard to take a breath and tune in to what's real. But every week, The Economist provides clarity on the issues that matter to you. Get a free print copy of The Economist. Text free copy to 78070 for a sensible, more considered view. Text free copy to 78070 now. The Economist. Clear thinking in an uncertain world. SMS charged as per tariff. New subscribers only. Offer ends 31st of July 2017. Further T's and C's apply. Visit economist.com/terms/specific offers for more details.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome to the game. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo. Nico, how are you?
Russ Cohen, my man.
Well, a lot of stuff going on in baseball. We've also got Mike Ogiello to talk a little bit about the American League, because I don't focus too much on the American League. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. Doing pretty good, except it's 1-1 with the Yankees and the Red Sox, and it'd be much better if the Yankees hit the lead.
I get that. I do. Let's talk about this Bryce Harper injury, because once again, Scott Boras is sort of sticking his nose into baseball where it doesn't belong. I saw the hyperextension. I've played enough baseball. I've stepped on enough first base that are slickery, or if your cleats are wet or your spikes are wet, you know, that could happen. Like, it's one of those things. How are you going to dictate that Major League Baseball keep the bases dry? Are you actually going to ask the umpires to dry off the bases? Like, Nico, this is just getting silly now with this stuff.
Yeah, no, rain's been a part of the game. You just have to, it's like football, sometimes you got to just play through it. Unless it's just pouring rain and you just can't get the game in at all.
But what about the injury? Like, obviously you've played, you've seen a lot of injuries. We've all watched a lot of injuries. Like, really, how are you going to prevent that injury?
You're not. I mean, it was scary. It was one of those things. They dodged the bullet. It could have been a lot worse.
Yes. Mike, what do you think?
Well, as somebody who has broken his ankle running out a ground ball, off ball, and I'm not a major leaguer, and I never even when I was in my teens run as fast as Bryce Harper. It's a freak injury. It's going to happen, unfortunately. But injury just seems to find Bryce Harper. I mean, this is not the first time where, you know, it's late in the season and he gets dinged up. I mean, for, you know, the potential of him being a free agent in a couple years, a team that I'm watching on television right now, possibly willing to spend $40 to $50 million a year, his propensity for getting hurt at the wrong time of the year would start to scare me away.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that's something that's pretty legit. So, excuse me, today's Mets-Phillies game had a really weird play, Nico. Adrubal Cabrera was on second. I want to say Freddie Galvis was on third, and there was a ball hit to the outfield. And initially, it looked like Galvis was going to tag up and go home, so he went about halfway. And when he went halfway, Cabrera went halfway. Then Cabrera went back to second, and when he sort of went back to second, he turned. And when he turned, he sort of took his eye off, I think, his coach, his third base coach. And so he didn't notice that Galvis had sort of stayed, and he, you know, retouched the bag and went to tag up a third, and then all of a sudden he gets the third, and Galvis is there. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that happen, and we always say this about baseball, but it just seems like now base running has taken a hit in the game. Like, this is something where a lot of players just don't have the instincts that they used to running the bases. Is it me, or have you noticed that too?
No, I've noticed too. That is what you call instincts, and that's something that you get just playing the game over and over and over again in the different situations and playing through the situations. That's a tag-up play, and you always got to wait for the runner ahead of you, and you know, just not running with your head up and just not paying attention to the game is what that was. And the Phillies have had that all year long. I got a chance to see them earlier in the year, and it's kind of pathetic to watch them play. I mean, they really walk in when you know, there's three outs, they're walking to the dugout, and, you know, when they're heading out of the dugout onto the field. They're kind of just walking and jogging around. I mean, there's really no spirit there at all.
Mike, what do you think? I mean, is it a situation where you're noticing this in the American League too, just little gaffes in games that cost teams on the bases?
Well, the fundamentals in this game have disappeared. It's become the game of the home run. I mean, Earl Weaver would love this game because everybody's, you know, swinging for the fences. And,
yeah,
you know, I was up in Toronto seeing a Yankees-Blue Jays game, and there were a couple, you know, like just not being able to get the bunt down, not being able to hit the ball to the right side of the infield to get a runner from second to third. Things that were common nature in the 70s and the 80s and maybe even in the 90s, they just seem to have lost that ability to do those things, and it makes the game pretty simplistic.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about Giancarlo Stanton. I think he's up to 42 homers, and so he set the club record. He clearly looks like he'll hit 50. He's got 250 in his career already. And he's one of the fastest, if not the fastest, to 250. It's kind of an amazing thing, Nick, because we, when the Marlins gave him all that money, I knew he was going to be a heck of a player. I didn't know how long he would stay a Marlin, though, because they had a history of trading guys when they pay him a lot of money. But at this point, 250 homers, I mean, Stanton's halfway there, and he's legit, right? We don't think about anything with him and any, you know, PEDs or anything like that. So it's actually kind of nice to see.
He is. I mean, he is kind of the face of the base of baseball. They were kind of making a joke that, you know, the young rookie Aaron Judge was the, you know, still in the show there at the Home Run Derby All-Star
mm-hmm.
game. But, you know, Stanton's the real man. He's the one who's already got the money in the bank, the big, you know, $300 million contract. He's been good for a long time, and he's proven himself, obviously, one of the fastest to hit the 250 home runs. And there's no stopping him. I mean, there's no reason why he's not going to hit another 250 and get over 500 home runs.
Mike, what's your thoughts on Giancarlo?
Well, he may get 500 home runs, but I seriously doubt they're going to be in Miami because with the new ownership situation with the, you know, the group led by Jeter, I think they said that the amount of salary that that team is being paid is over $100 million, which shocked me because we know that that team, even if they're successful, are not going to draw $100 million worth of fans in terms
right.
of tickets. So, you know, more than likely the first move that they're going to make probably this winter is sell Giancarlo Stanton to the highest bidder, get as many young players as you can, and try to rebuild with the young team, probably along the lines of a Tampa Bay, you know, pitching
mm-hmm.
and young cheap hitting. I mean, that's probably the way they're going to have to go for them to make a go of it in terms of a money-making enterprise.
All right. So, Mike, we look at the Yankees, and they're in pretty good position, but not necessarily for first place. It's really for the wild card at this point. Excuse me. And Aaron Judge is 35 homers. He's really slowed down. Slowed down to the point where now second half of the season, Michael Conforto from the Mets is actually the leader for second half homers. He's got 25. He's still 10 behind Judge. But, you know, there was a time where I looked at Conforto's homers and said, there's no way he has a chance to even catch a guy like Judge. But I don't know. He might. I mean, what's going on with him?
Well, I really think that the absence of Matt Holliday, the absence
mm-hmm.
of Starlin Castro, the absence until this weekend of Aaron Hicks has really started to have a detrimental effect on the Yankees because, I mean, the whole point to their lineup early in the season was, you know, you had Judge, you had Sanchez, but they were part of a lineup that was seven or eight deep. And now it's all the weight is on Judge, all the weight is on Sanchez to sort of carry the offense. And you see the way, you know, they'll score 11 runs against the Blue Jays and then they'll get shut out twice. It's a really hot and cold offense. And that's really, I mean, understandable because you have a couple rookies in the middle of your lineup. And, you know, I think that Judge sort of needs that support, you know, needs Castro hitting behind him. You know, he has Didi Gregorius who's having a great year. Hitting cleanup, he's not exactly a power threat, and teams probably decide that he can either pitch around and he's still getting a ton of walks, or throw that high fastball and hope they can entice him to swing at it, which he has been doing lately. So until they get all their guys back in the lineup, I think Judge is going to continue to struggle.
Nico, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, the Yankees are going to struggle if they don't get some pitching too. They got a couple pitchers on the disabled list. Tanaka just went on there as well with CC Sabathia, and then, you know, the big pitcher, the big name that they got, Sonny Gray, has not done anything for him at all. I mean, it looks like two games that he started, he can't get the wins. It'll be interesting to see how he does and pitches in New York.
Well, except for that 14 strikeout outing that Tanaka had a couple starts ago, I think they're better off with him on the DL than they are him pitching, because I think he's been pitching with a sore arm or a sore shoulder all year. He's pitched like that because this is clearly his worst year. And, you know, for those who are thinking, oh, Tanaka's going to go free agent because he's got that opt-out clause, there's no way in hell that he is opting out, just like there's no way in hell that David Price is going to opt out of his deal in Boston, because
No. They're
guaranteed money, and they were both pitching hurt.
Yeah, no question about it. Interesting thing, the other day, I was looking it up, and Mike and I talked about it in another show, Neek, but when Jacob deGrom won his game for the Mets, he now has 25% of the team wins. Maybe it's a little lower now that they won again today, but and I think he's got 12 wins. He might squeak out 16, 17. Like, at some point in this league, we know it's possible to win Cy Young without winning 20, because not everybody wins 20. Is that going to weigh in his favor? Because he's got every other stat.
Yeah, it sure is. And like I said, look at the team he's playing on. He's certainly not getting the run support. He's not, playing with the championship team there. He's proven to be the ace of that team. I mean, every time they need a win, he comes up with the big win. You know, it's fun to watch him pitch. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how the Mets would look if they still had Thor in the lineup go 1-2 punch with DeGrom. What a great
Mike,
year.
What's your thought about that with DeGrom?
Well, I mean, it was not too much in the distant past that Felix Hernandez won the Cy Young with I don't think it was a sub-500 record, but I think he was like 13-12. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, you put up a ton of strikeouts, you win a certain percentage of your team's victories. I think it's, possible. I mean, we're not talking about like Andre Dawson hitting 50 home runs for a last place team. You know, the Mets are not last place in the NL East. The thing is he might get just as many votes for MVP than he might for the Cy Young if people decide that, you have to be on a winning team or you have to pile up 20 victories. But he clearly is one of the more valuable players in this league right now.
Well, here's the funny thing. So ESPN's got a Cy Young predictor. And I don't like it. Like, for the American League, it's obvious, right? It's Chris Sale. I actually picked Chris Sale preseason, and it was a good pick by me. But for the National League, it's close. Now, for the Cy Young predictor, when you have Kenley Jansen as your second guy, you got a problem, because he doesn't have the numbers to win a Cy Young, even for a great reliever. But as you would imagine, there's a lot of Dodgers in this list. Alex Woods, 14-1. But am I really giving him the Cy Young? No. No, I think that's more of a product. Now, you look at Kershaw and you say, okay, he's 15-2, 168 in strikeouts, 140 innings. Now, DeGrom has 179 strikeouts and 150 innings. Like, he has more strikeouts. He just doesn't have the ERA that Kershaw does, but he doesn't have the team either. So when you look at all the other guys, it does look like to me like it's Kershaw and DeGrom and – you know, you probably throw Scherzer and I guess Alex Wood, but can you really give it to Alex Wood?
Yeah, well, I think you can. He's having a great year, one of the best years I've seen. He's kind of come from nowhere, and he's right there on the team with Kershaw, and he's kind of proven to kind of keep right up there with Kershaw numbers.
Yeah, I got to look at the run support, though. Something tells me he's getting a lot of run support.
you can't give the Cy Young to Kershaw if he doesn't come back for, I would say, the last month of the season. And he doesn't have to dominate, but as long as he's back to being effective and maybe wins a few games, then I think you have I think the writers will be given, you know, an excuse to say, okay, we can vote for him. But if he, you know, I know that he was out for, or he's been out for, I think 4 weeks right now. They said 4 to 6. You know, if he comes back and he's not himself, then, you know, I think it's an open race. Maybe you give Wood an opportunity, but if it's me, I wouldn't hesitate to vote for DeGrom if he continues to do what he's doing right now, and no matter what his record is. I mean, this is a year where, you know, there's some good performances, but it may be one of those years where a guy who's got a 500 or around a 500 record is the best pitcher.
Yeah, he's getting tremendous run support, by the way. Like, early in the season, there were games he won 8-4, 13-5. In May, he won 13-5, 12-1, 7-2. In June, he won 10-4, 6-1, 5-4. Then in July, 12-3, 6-4. Like, a lot of these teams are tapping out when they're losing these games to the Dodgers too. Like, he hasn't pitched in this run. He has pitched 7 innings once, 8 innings once. That's it. He's like a 6-inning pitcher. Like, I think he's really a product of the team. I have a hard time thinking he's in the Cy Young race. Like, again, I think in today's advanced stats and things like that, people will look at it a bit closer. I hope. Because it's not just about the record.
You got to think in the run support, too, is the reason why the players get up and want to play and want to score runs for the pitcher, because the pitcher throws strikes. He keeps
them
in the
ballpark. Well, but they're a great team. I mean, they just score a lot of runs. They do. The Dodgers are an amazing team that just scores a lot of runs. And when you're getting that kind of run support, it is easier to pile up the wins. And again, we're only talking about one more win, but, of course, he has less losses because – he's winning these games. These games are by a lot of runs. There's a lot of run differential there.
Yeah, and you can't hold it against the pitcher of being, say, a 6-inning pitcher for the simple reason is we've gotten to the point where a 6-inning outing is what everybody except Chris Sale and maybe a couple other guys do. It's just that's the nature of the business. Unfortunately, you know, after Kansas City assembled that big bullpen and three or four guys a few years ago and they won the series, everybody is doing that. The Red Sox are doing it. The Yankees are doing it. They've got 5-6 relievers, and they, you know, basically if you get to the fifth inning or after the fifth inning and you have a starter who's given up 3 runs and you're in the lead, they will pull that guy no matter what. So I think we've seen this and we're going to continue to see the 5 to 6 inning starting pitcher, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I don't think there's any way of getting around it. You're probably right, but it's good conversation. It's one of those things where at least the National League isn't sewn up like the American League. The American League is clearly sewn up. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So, again, now we're at the point of the season where, you know, we're not down to the nitty-gritty yet, but, Nico, I'll ask you, who's the best team in baseball? Astros, Dodgers, Red Sox? Who is
it? It's funny, you know, I'd have to say at this time, it looks like the Angels are up there. That's a name we haven't heard all year long. They're picking the right time to make their run. Looks like they're in playoff in that wild card position right now. And I don't know, they got Mike Trout back. It may be good for them to make a run here with Pujols having one of his better years.
Mike, what's your thought?
I right now I would have to say it's the Dodgers, but the thing that I'm worried about with them is, I mean, they are pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
The Kershaw situation, you know, that, I think, you know, they get Darvish, they have Wood, but, you know, they need Kershaw and him to actually perform in the playoffs for them to win it all. And they, you know, they just have not had a history of coming through recently in the postseason. you know, I'm still scared that a team like the Cubs or a team like the Red Sox or, you know, they're going to, you know, they have the organizational depth. The thing about the Red Sox that they just don't have a lot of power. If they had Ortiz still playing in the lineup, I would think they were a definite threat with their pitching staff and with their bullpen. But and they're a very good fielding team. But right now, the overwhelming power of the Dodgers, I would say that they're the favorite. But well, let's talk in October, because more than likely they'll probably disappoint.
Yeah, I'm still going Astros for some reason. We have all forgotten the Astros, like, you know, maybe just because they're so far ahead that it's just getting boring. Although, and here's the scary part. They're 3-7 in their last 10, and they still have 72 wins, which is, to me, it's just crazy. Like, that's just the kind of lead that they've got. And they're 12 ahead of the Angels. So even though the Angels have gotten hot at the right time, they still probably can't beat the Astros in my mind. So even the Cubs, who have gotten hot lately, I don't know if they're going to beat the Dodgers or if they're going to beat the Astros. So I'm still going to go Astros, and we'll see about it in a little bit. I mean, Dodgers are up to 83 wins. I mean, they're going to probably win, I don't know, what's the record again? Was it 115 games for Seattle, Mike? Is that it?
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah. They might get it. They might. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're 34-20 on the road and 49-14 at home.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, you know, what these teams are going to do before that, you know, that final trade deadline, the August 31st
yeah.
waiver trade deadline. You know, there was some talk this week regarding Houston being interested, with Keuchel's health situation being a little iffy, about them maybe going after a Verlander, but Verlander's contract the last two or I think he's got 2 years left after this year, or either two or three, and the money is like $30 million but per season, and that's just too rich for their blood. But I really think that the Astros have to do more than adding Francisco Liriano to their pitching staff if they really want to come out of the American League. They've got an unbelievable lineup. But I think that they still need a pitcher or two, and they could still get that before the 31st, but I don't know.
They could. They could. I mean, look, I mean, the Mets just dealt Neil Walker the other day to the Brewers. So there's still guys that will get dealt. Although, boy, I got to tell you, I mean, when you deal a guy of Neil Walker's ilk, and I get that he's been injured, and I get that the Yankees didn't like his medicals and all that, that's fine. But when you do it for a player to be named later, and then the GM of the team says, well, you know, we've been working on this for a while, it's like, Nico, how can I take Sandy Alderson seriously on this when that's all you get for a player? And I get he's an expiring guy, but a player to be named later, like, we know that most times, and especially in modern-day baseball, players to be named later are usually not very good.
Yeah, it's like a bag of chips. And then when you see that second base hole right there that it leaves, like, what happened to Daniel Murphy? You had your second baseman. You had someone that was dynamic,
mm-hmm.
someone that was unprecedented in their history of, you know, player just every day gets hit. I mean, he's, you know, proven year after year he's one of the top hitters in the league, if not one of the best. And now you got a gaping hole at second base. And, you got no Daniel Murphy, no magic.
It's true, and Walker was the replacement for that, Mike, and now next year they're probably just going to sign Jose Reyes cheap. That's probably the replacement.
Very likely. I mean, you know, I look at the situation with the Mets, and, you know, I've never been confused with being a Mets fan, but, you know, knowing people who are Mets fans, I have pity for them, because this organization is being run like a, you know, like a circus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have one of the best young outfielders in baseball in Conforto, and what was it, 2 months that they barely played him? They were playing Granderson and Bruce, and
he's still hitting leadoff, which is not where Michael Conforto should ever be hitting.
Right, the guy has over 20 home runs, and you're hitting, and most of the time he's hitting with nobody on base, which is just brilliant. They got nothing for Duda. they probably could have maximized their value in return for Jay Bruce if they would have kept some money. And, you know, apparently they didn't want to trade him to the team across in another borough because, you know, they're worried about the back page of the New York Post. You know, stop being concerned about that and start being concerned about winning some friggin' games. That was
I agree. I mean, that's, to me, that's the name of the game. But we'll see. We'll see where that heads up. So, Nico, we see that there's this Big Three basketball league, and to me it's sort of like embarrassing, and I get that people want to see like the old-timers sort of play, and I just saw a headline where Charles Oakley nearly got into a fight on the court and got kicked out. Do you think that they'll ever do this for baseball where some guy will say, hey, let's do an old-timers league, and, you know, we'll play once or twice a week, and people will come out to see the guys they used to like. Is anything like that in the future, or do I think that that would never happen with baseball?
No, I think they tried it once, and I think, you know, it was a success down in Florida for a while. They had a lot of the former players came back, and they played kind of at the end of their careers, and it just wasn't enough for Florida. And it's probably not going to be enough, you know, can't get enough hype there for, you know, the older players. Now, if you mix it in with a couple of new guys and some of the older players, I think you got to win there in more of a development league.
Now, Mike, do you long to see, like, Jorge Posada get up again or Paul O'Neill?
I can see them in old-timers day. I don't need to see them more than that. I've seen, you know, like major league players playing softball later on and they're, you know, like I really don't need to see it. I mean, I remember, what was it, that one old timers game in Washington where Luke Appling hits a home run you know, have old timers games. That's fine. To put a league together, I don't want to see it in any sport. We're going to have it in the NFL, former NFL players giving more CTE to each other because they're hitting each other when they're 50 years old. I don't want to see it in any sport, honestly.
Yeah, I sort of feel that way too. I'm not a. It's not one of the things that I look forward to. So, let's talk a little bit about the commissioner, who is clearly looking to, change the game of baseball, Nico, and proposes a lot of stuff, but. You know, there weren't any rule changes this year, but now apparently for 2018, they're considering a lot of stuff. And here's things that they're looking at. A pitch clock, smaller strike zone, fewer visits to the mound. You know, so what do you think about this?
Well, I think the commissioner, he wants to make a lot of changes. It seems like he has a little bit of trouble with the players' union, running things by the union. The union really doesn't want to make any much change to the game. Less is good. And that's the way it's always been with the unions, kind of like kind of pulling teeth just to kind of get anything done.
Well, here's the thing, and Mike, I'll start it with you again, is like – players stepping out. There was supposed to be a rule about that. You know, Derek Jeter, now that he's an owner, let's hope he doesn't teach players how to step out and adjust their batting gloves 100 times. Like, to me, there should be a rule against that, and there was supposed to be, but it didn't seem like they ever enforced it.
I know they are enforcing it in AAA. I've seen the pitch clock in AAA games in Buffalo. I don't know why they're not doing it in the major leagues. You know, they clearly want to get the games under, say, 3 hours. I mean, you know, games like tonight where it's, you know, 1-1 in the top of the eighth, Red Sox and Yankees, the game started at 8 o'clock. It's now almost 10:30, and you're in the eighth inning. That's a pretty breezy pace for a Yankees-Red Sox game. You know, most of the time it's four and a half hours. They're ordeals. I mean – it's ponderous at times, and I wish that they would do certain things. You know, I don't think batters are like Mike Hargrove. They remember where he used to take the helmet off, spit in the helmet, put it back on, constantly adjusting. You know, it's not like that anymore. But I think the thing that's got to be curbed is the catcher's going to the mound. It's happening a dozen times an inning. It's getting to the point of ridiculousness.
Yeah, I said it, I think, on Twitter last week. The biggest thing for me would be just stop all these players going to the pitcher's mound and stop all of these visits. Like, if a manager comes out, it should be that he has to change the pitcher, like, period. Only the pitching coach should be allowed to go out there. No other player should be allowed to go out to talk to the pitcher and sort of get this huddle thing going, because those are the biggest time wasters besides trying to figure out if you got the right call, which you're never going to be able to get rid of that. I mean, those are all time wasters. But talking about Sunday Night Baseball, Mike, what inning? We're almost at 10:25 as we tape the show. What inning is it the Yankee game in?
Top of the eighth.
Okay. So it's still not even over. Now, last week there was a delay for the Mets-Dodgers game, and Howie Rose said that it was because of a network stooge that the game was being delayed. And here's the thing. Nico, I'll start with you. These games on Sunday night, they're poorly rated now. People give up tickets. Like they said, literally, attendance-wise, it's halved to a lot of the other games during the year because fans got to work the next day. They don't want to be up that late. At what point does the league go to ESPN and say, hey, we got to redo this, even if there's a contract, because it's just not working?
It is not working, but, you know, they've got the great thing, MLB.TV, where the fans can just kind of catch the game later and, you know, kind of stay out of that hustle and bustle. That's just kind of the sign of the times now. We're an internet frenzy, you know, social media community now, and the game's changing with that. It's so easy to just sit there and watch it on the game on your phone, on your computer, or anywhere you're at in the world, and you can get the game. So you don't necessarily have to be in that seat anymore.
No, you don't. But as a fan, you'd like to try and stay up. But, Mike, I mean, some of these games end at midnight, right? Just for regular nine-inning games on these Sunday night games.
Yeah, and, I mean, one minor solution might be, how about starting the game at 7 o'clock instead of 8?
Right.
I mean, you know, they start the games at 7, you know, Yankee games at 7 o'clock or Blue Jays games at 7 o'clock during the week.
At least when it's not football season, right? I mean, I sort of get it if you've just shown an NFL game and you want to let it breathe a little before the Sunday night football game, and so that's fine. You do it at 8 o'clock. Maybe you want to go up against NBC, whatever. But you've had the whole regular season here that has no football or any football of consequence, and you still have a few more weeks of it. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to start a game at 8 o'clock that's on the West Coast, that makes sense because it's a 5 o'clock start on a Sunday. That's fine. But, yeah, there's no excuse for the game being starting at 8. And, honestly, I think you lose a bunch of your Eastern audience if the game goes into 11, 11:30, 12 o'clock. I mean, they start losing audience in the World Series if the game goes that late. So why would it not be the case if they do that, you know, in August, even if it's a Red Sox-Yankees game?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. How many of those Sunday night games are Red Sox-Yankee games, Mike? I mean, it's like, does it matter as much as it used to? That's my question to you.
Well, I mean, I see just as many Dodgers, Giants, and Cubs, Cardinals. They, you know, ESPN loves their rivalries.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always a Red Sox-Yankees series on a weekend. It's always going to be Sunday night. You know that Sunday or Saturday is going to be the Fox game, and then Sunday is going to be the ESPN game. It's etched in stone because they know that that series will bring ratings.
Nico, do you think that they should sometimes change it up, or do you think just keep going to the well?
No, that's it. The Boston doesn't get any better than the Red Sox Yankees on a Sunday night, that's for sure. I mean, they are the face of the game, and they're going to continue to play that rivalry, I think, long past when we're gone, that's for sure.
All right. Well, that was a good show and some good baseball talk. We'll come back next week and do it again. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. That's the game, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Okay. Thanks, Russ. My man.
All right, Nick. Take care.
These days, good sense is in short supply. Amid the fear-mongering and fake news, it can be hard to take a breath and tune in to what's real. But every week, The Economist provides clarity on the issues that matter to you. Get a free print copy of The Economist. Text free copy to 78070 for a sensible, more considered view. Text free copy to 78070 now. The Economist. Clear thinking in an uncertain world. SMS charged as per tariff. New subscribers only. Offer ends 31st of July 2017. Further T's and C's apply. Visit economist.com/terms/specific offers for more details.